Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, at this stage, unless this is the first time you've ever listened to the radio, we're all aware that we need to reduce CO2 emissions to tackle the climate crisis. But even if we were to stop emitting today, what can we do about all of the things we've already put into the atmosphere? Well, Dr. John Breen is Chief Technology Officer of Negate Carbon. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, John. Talk to me about this idea of carbon capture, because this obviously sounds like a large part of the solution to our climate crisis. What is carbon capture?
So carbon capture is essentially taking out the carbon dioxide that we've put into the atmosphere. And we've put 800 billion tons of CO2 into the atmosphere since the Industrial Revolution. And we know that that's is the primary cause of climate change. So CO2 accounts for 65% of climate change. So carbon capture is about taking that
CO2. Is it that much? 65%? Wow. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So it's about taking that CO2 out of the atmosphere. It's the primary cause. So let's take it out of the atmosphere and put it somewhere where it's safe, preferably underground, essentially where it came from. It came from fossil fuel. So let's take it out of the atmosphere and put it underground. And that's what we're striving to do at Negate Carbon.
Just describe how much CO2 is in the air that we breathe at the moment and how difficult a job it is to extract CO2 from our air.
Okay, so CO2 in the atmosphere is roughly the same concentration all around the world. And it's risen dramatically over since the Industrial Revolution. We're now up at 420 parts per million. So that's equivalent to 0.042% of the atmosphere. So it's a very small amount, but it has an outsized effect on climate change.
Mm.
And our aim then is to take out that very small amount of CO2 that's in the atmosphere. Essentially, we pass through large volumetric flows of air through our machines, and they selectively take out those small amounts of CO2 along with water vapour and allow the rest of the air to pass through.
I want to talk about your technology in depth in a bit, but before we do, what are the challenges with taking CO2 out of the atmosphere? And why do we have to capture CO2 as a molecule, as opposed to, and this is me asking a question that the answer is probably very obvious, as opposed to breaking up that molecule and having oxygen and carbon?
Yes, okay. So it's very energy intensive to break carbon, to break up CO2 into carbon.
Is it, yeah?
And oxygen, very energy intensive. Well, the reverse reaction is the combustion of fuel to give you CO2.
Right, yeah.
And we get the whole of our energy that has powered the world since the Industrial Revolution has been based on that heat and work that we've obtained from that energy.
Right. So as we think of some of the laws of physics, it would require a similar sort of energy to turn that back into carbon and oxygen.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So when we're talking about carbon capture, we're not talking about taking the carbon and leaving oxygen. We're just talking about taking the molecules of carbon dioxide, which in pure form is a gas. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And so tell me about the current applications or the current attempts to do that before we talk about your technology. How have we tried to tackle this problem historically, and what are the biggest challenges?
Yeah, look, I guess people haven't really challenged it or tried to combat it until fairly recently. I mean, the obvious I mean, you can grow trees, for example, to take out CO2 from the atmosphere. I mean, that's nature's way of doing it. There are other ways of doing it. There's fertilizing the ocean, for example, to promote algal growth to remove CO2. There's growing crops and then burning those crops and taking out the CO2 from the smokestack.
Right.
So, you know, there's various different ways of doing it.
But in terms of the physical separation of the molecules, we haven't been doing that for very long?
No, we haven't really, no. It's a very new technology to try and do that. So we're really sort of addressing the climate change problem in the last 20 or 30 years. So, and we're at the early stages of it. I kind of liken it to the early stages of the development of solar energy, for example. You know,
right.
It started off in the 1970s, very expensive, very low conversion of solar energy into electricity. But now, you know, the price has reduced by 99.6%. And
are we 50 years away from large-scale deployment of carbon capture?
No, I think we have grand plans. We're looking to scale up our own system to capture 5.5 million tons by 2035. But, you know, we have to start somewhere. Mm. But I think we'll grow very quickly.
Okay, so talk to me about the science. How on earth do you capture carbon dioxide out of the air when it's in such small concentration? What is the physics and the science behind it?
Well, essentially, at the heart of it all is the sorbent. And for us, the sorbent is this solid material. And it's got these groups on the surface that have a very strong affinity for CO2. So you pass the air over it, the CO2 reacts with these surface groups, it's trapped, and it takes up water vapour as well. And we keep doing that until the sorbent is full. And we generally have two of these operating in tandem. So one is trapping CO2 and the other is regenerating. So when the trap becomes full, we need to regenerate it. And we do that by applying heat and vacuum. So we heat it up to 80 degrees Celsius. We drive off the CO2 and we use a vacuum pump. And at the outlet of the vacuum pump, we have, when we take out the water vapour, pure CO2.
Hmm. This seems very clever. What is, when you say that the sorbent traps it, is this you say a reaction? Is this then a physical or a chemical reaction?
It's a chemical reaction,
right.
Yes. So it forms a bond with the surface groups on the sorbent.
Okay. And so now you have pure CO2 and water. The problem, of course, is that all of these systems obey the laws of physics, and to do this, you need some sort of energy to make this work. What is the source of energy? How do you... Because obviously energy creates more CO2 if it comes from, you know, greenhouse gases, so it ends up being not very efficient. What is the source of energy for this sort of a machine?
Yeah, so look, obviously it does take energy. And that source of energy has to be renewable energy, because there's no point in us using fossil fuel energy to trap CO2. We'd end up emitting more than we actually trap. So it absolutely has to be renewable energy. That can be solar, it can be wind. And then we're also, we need heat, and we can generate the heat with electricity using heat pump technology, and we do that. Or we can also use waste heat from industries, you know, such as, you know, data centres,
yeah.
For example. Most of the energy that goes into data centres, it comes off as heat. So we can utilise waste heat and upgrade it for our purposes as well. So, or we can just use electricity to create it.
So we have the CO2 from this very clever system. It's in some sort of gas container. What happens to it then?
Well,
it's concentrated and put under pressure, put into some sort of large container. Do we bury it? Can we do anything useful with that CO2?
Well, we think our primary aim is to take that CO2 and to bury it underground.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're partnering with companies that specialise in doing that.
Okay.
So there's certain type of rock types that will react with the CO2 to form mostly carbonates. So basalt is a good example. There's another rock type called peridotite, and there's a lot of that in the Middle East. Basalt For example, Iceland has a lot of basalt. Northern Ireland has basalt as well. So these rock types can react with the CO2. So basically what you do is you take, say, 1 ton of CO2 and mix it with 20 tons of water. You get fizzy water and you pump it deep underground, and it over time reacts with those rocks.
Oh.
That's one way of doing it.
That's not so bad. I thought you meant like just stick the container underneath, like sweeping stuff under the carpet. Let the next 10 generations deal with it. Okay, so the rocks actually absorb CO2. Do they fix it in a way?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. So if you
end as long as you don't mine that rock, it should be okay.
Yeah, it ends up really as carbonates, which can be stored for centuries. But that's not the only way you can do it as well. You can also store it in depleted oil and gas reservoirs. So, for example, there's a depleted gas reservoir off the coast of Norway called Sleipner. And they've been doing that since storing CO2 since 1996. And they've stored 23 million tons of CO2 off the coast of Norway. And we've got Kinsale gas field, obviously off the coast of Ireland, that could store 330 million tons of CO2.
Are those sort of gas fields like disaster resilient? You know, I mean, you know, if something were to happen, like an earthquake or something, obviously in Ireland, much less likely, but in other parts of the world, is that a long-term solution, really, using gas fields to store these things?
I think, as I said, a preference is to react with the geological storage. Yeah. But, you know, of course, it's very important that it is safe. And the Sleipner field has been monitored extensively over decades now to make sure that there's no seepage of CO2. They've done very detailed studies
right.
of the way the CO2 is moving around in the reservoir, and they're happy that it is stored safely.
Okay, so this sounds very exciting. Let's talk some of the numbers. How big is one of these machines, and what sort of good could it actually do us? I mean, how much carbon can one of your machines capture?
So we've built a demo carbon capture machine that's operating away down in Waterford at the moment. And we're in the design phase now of our full-scale unit, which captures 300 tonnes of CO2 per annum.
Okay. Is that a lot?
300 tonnes, well, it's a first step. Obviously, we have to capture millions over time. And the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change have called out direct air capture and say, yes, this needs to contribute over 300 million tonnes, or billion tonnes, I should say, of capture of carbon
right.
in the year up to 2100.
Mm.
So these are the first steps. So
is it very expensive to run or deploy? Are there difficult materials required? And this is orbit. Is that difficult to mine? Like if you were given a blank check tomorrow, is it feasible to scale it to really tackle that problem of a direct air capture of carbon?
Yeah, we definitely think so. Yeah. So we're targeting, you know, values of 95 euros per tonne of CO2 by the year 2050, for example. So we think that's a very sensible and fair price, and one that people will have to pay as a carbon tax, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are talking about, and we have carbon taxes at the moment of in around 100 euros per tonne of CO2. So we think it is a very reasonable cost to capture carbon.
So this device is about the size of 3 ship containers, is that right? How many of these would we need to have a really solid effect on the amount of carbon dioxide in our environment causing climate change?
So I guess if you wanted to capture 1 billion tonnes of CO2, for example, you can capture 12 tonnes of CO2 per metre squared per year for one of our systems. So to put that into context, that would be less than the area of Dublin City to capture 1 billion tonnes of CO2 with our units.
Mm.
The equivalent for trees, for example, to do that, they capture CO2 at a rate of 0.003 tonnes of CO2 per metre squared per year. So you'd need an area the size of Germany,
wow,
forested to capture the same amount of CO2 as our units, so that we can do it in an area less than the size of Dublin.
I think it's a really important comparison, because you know, we do talk about, you know, planting trees and reforestation, and they are, of course, answers, but there's so much we have to throw at this to solve that problem. So if you deployed quite a lot of these, the plan is very ambitious. And of course, with startups and with early stage technology companies, plans are always very ambitious. And the, you know, unfortunately, not all of those companies make it to realize their dreams, and very few of them do, actually. But this seems like a very promising technology. It seems like there are there's applications of it to put them almost anywhere that would be suitable. What sort of barriers are in the way of deploying this large scale? Is it, you've got the proof of concept, so we know it works. Is it investors looking at lots of other projects? Is it people getting distracted by carbon credits? Or what do you see as the biggest issue with rolling something like this out in a major scale?
Well, look, I think investment you touched upon there is obviously very important, you know.
Does the government invest in this sort of technology?
Some governments do, yeah. The UK government is putting a lot of money into CCS. The Danish government has also put money into governments do.
You haven't said the Irish government, though.
Not yet, but the US government has put massive amounts of money into carbon capture, you know, through their Inflation Reduction Act. So governments do put money in, and it needs that kind of kickstart, that money up front to really make this happen. Mm. But once it gets going, then it's self-sustaining off the price that we get for the carbon credits.
In terms of the question of energy in, carbon, CO2 out, have you found a way to make that viable in terms of the amount of energy that's going in, not counteracting the amount of carbon dioxide you're capturing?
Yeah, absolutely. We that's important for us. So it has to be renewable energy. So once it's renewable energy, you don't have any CO2 emissions with the electricity going in.
Yeah.
So everything that you capture then pretty much is net reduction of CO2 in the atmosphere.
Yeah. It sounds really, really exciting. I'd like to think that we would get more of this sort of thing. You have investment from a company called Deep Sky. Do they, you know, is the plan to deploy this internationally? Do you have competitors doing the same thing?
Yes, very much. So I suppose we'd love to do it in Ireland, actually. Ireland has got really good climate. Climate's important. So temperature and humidity impact the performance of the sorbent. Mm. And we've got quite a narrow range of maximum, minimum temperatures here in Ireland. But our first deployment is in Canada. We kind of have to go where the storage is.
Right.
And there is a project in Europe to build ships that will transport CO2 around Europe, and they'll pump it into places like Sleipner in Norway. But we prefer to co-locate where the storage is. And at the moment, they're in places like Canada. So we have this Canadian project where we're going to supply our first full-scale unit and deploy it for a project in Alberta. We're also looking at the Middle East as well. So they've got very nice rock type there that reacts with the CO2. Mm. So we're looking at places where they've got the storage. We'd like Ireland to be one of those places in the future as well. But there are initial targets.
Really interesting and exciting good news when it comes to climate change, which doesn't feature a lot on this program. Dr. John Breen, Chief Technology Officer of NEG8, that's NEG8 Carbon. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
Sunday morning at 10 on News Talk.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.